It's weird, y'all. Justin and I have been gone from Polygon for 8 days now, as at the time of this recording. I swan to John. I can feel myself getting better at and just generally knowing more about sports.
That's so strange.
The longer I go...
Oh, I thought you were going to say video games.
I thought you were going to say better at first-person shooters.
That is a thing, too. I'm getting better at first-person shooters. My body's becoming stronger. Like, I'm finally, after leaving the games industry where I worked for a decade, my muscles have started coming back from their atrophied state. And just, like, I know the names of a lot of baseball players and teams, and I can throw a baseball way faster. So...
And is it just nonstop sex now, or...
I mean, I don't like talking about my bedroom stuff. But
realistically, yeah.
That's a kind of sport, isn't it? So take from that what you will. So
my name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the month.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best game of April the month.
My name is Chris Plant, and I know the best video game ever.
My name is Ross Frustick, and I know the best game of the week.
Welcome to the Besties, where we talk about the latest and greatest in sports news and hockey. The playoffs are in full
swing. Where do you guys come
down
on the Pete Rose thing?
Oh,
let him in. let Pete in. Let Pete in. We placed a few bets. We all been there. Just let Pete in. And we talk about popcorn, new flavors, and video games. But this month, it's a lot more about video games than usual. You know, they have come such a long way. Since the original Pac-Man.
I'm so sorry, but before we get off popcorn, because that's where we left it off in the previous episode, Old Bay as a popcorn flavor. Yay or nay?
Interesting.
Go on.
I have no idea what Old Bay tastes like.
It
like
tastes
shrimp?
Like Maine or Baltimore.
Baltimore. Baltimore like is very proud of Old
Bay. The smell
of
Baltimore on your popcorn.
If you pried up the wood of an old shrimp boat and then ran that over a cheese grater.
Mm. You know, when I briefly dated Dame Judi Dench, I told everybody she was my Old Bay.
Yeah. I have a follow-up question. Picture, you know those tins of popcorn that come in like three flavors?
Mm.
Picture that. But it's actually like the spinning part of a revolver.
Ah,
which of those parts would you like it to fall on?
Wait,
assuming that it would have to be shot into your mouth.
You're talking about a popcorn gun that has maybe
it's a popcorn
six
gun, but it's the size. It's like the barrel or the revolver part is like a foot.
You're talking
wide.
About popcorn Russian roulette. What's the best scenario that it
so
lands
different
on.
Flavors in each. You didn't clarify that it's one of those
well,
drums
it is,
that has
it's
like
always three different
flavors.
They have that it's like
not
a
always sometimes you have just one flavor.
No, that's chaos.
Okay,
if I could
is this the fucking intro or
yeah,
is this
so,
the show I'm
the show
out.
Now
this
is how
the show.
It's gonna go this
if I was gonna if I was gonna marry fuck kill this popcorn equation I would say marry the cheese, because I could eat an infinite amount of that.
Oh,
fuck,
gross.
Fuck the caramel, because I want that very badly, but only a small amount of it. Kill the regular. Get out of here, regular. Why are you here?
What are you doing here?
I don't even know why they bother.
Why did Griffin bother fucking the caramel corn? That's the question on everybody's lips. we want to talk about the video games of May. Towards the end of the show, I'm assuming we'll talk about
maybe
the future.
Maybe we could do April 1st, because
April.
We didn't. This is the one that we're actually
April.
Doing.
God
May
almighty.
Hasn't happened yet.
We just missed April entirely. So April is the month that we're talking about. So does anybody have any honorable mentions? I'd like to start with one, if that's okay with everybody, because it didn't come out in April, and it might have come out many, many years ago. But I started playing, we were up in the Midwest on tour this past weekend, and I started playing this game on my iPad called Dream Quest, and it is a roguelike deck building game that it has been out for a few years. And the look, I'm sending you all a screenshot. If you could just pop that open real quick and just look at it real quick in the Skype.
Yeah.
That's what it literally looks like.
I thought Justin was playing a game he made on the airplane next to me.
It is the single worst looking game I've ever played in my entire life.
I would also say I already forgot the name of the game.
Dream
because
Quest.
Because it was
Dream
that
Quest.
Generic.
Dream
How can you
Quest.
Forget?
So Dream you Quest. You go into the dungeon, which is like on a grid based thing, and you go through this sort of maze like structure, looking for enemies. You're looking at other elements in this screenshot. I can tell that you're looking for enemies. When you run into them, you play like sort of a card game against them, and you level up your character. You find treasure chests that have new cards. It's just really brilliantly balanced. If you look at the iOS reviews of this game, it is incredibly like rabid. People talk about playing this game for hundreds upon hundreds of hours, and I completely get it. At first, I almost insta-deleted it because I opened it and I was like, oh my, no fucking way. No
way. You can't
even
do pixel art.
No,
it's
great.
It's MS Paint. Like
this
it's,
is like
it's...
the early days of Shockwave, though. Like free online games. This makes me so happy that a game can become popular again with like line writer art.
But it's if you like that kind of thing, the roguelike deck building thing. It's basically like you do a run and then you get maybe like an achievement for number of monsters killed or number of steps taken or whatever, killing a certain enemy. That makes your next run a little bit better. And you have different classes you can go in with that feel very different. There's like a thief who after every 8 battles, they can find a hidden treasure chest, and the warrior can smash through walls of the maze. So you can like find shortcuts to the end if you, or to like health power ups if you want to,
did you play Slay the Spire, that deck building RPG I brought
no,
a couple
but I've
months
heard
ago.
Some comparisons to that.
It's
for sure.
Fucking excellent. I think if you dig this, you'd like that. Okay.
It's just on Steam though, right?
Yes, for now. I bet it seems like a good fit for mobile. Speaking of mobile, I played a mobile game for the first time in forever. I played Florence, which I believe Allegra wrote about at Polygon, and it's a sort of a narrative adventure game that. Justin and I were talking about it right before we started recording because we both played it during this
show,
tour.
And I gave you all my great insights then.
Yeah.
Steal it.
Well, Justin, go ahead and share your great insights.
Well, no, it's you have to set it up first. Mine is a criticism.
What's cool about it is that it tells this story about a young woman named Florence and this relationship that she gets into and how it sort of impacts her creative life. And it tells that story through like really neat ways of interpreting story beats through like game mechanics. And so for example, and I guess this is like a slight spoiler because it's not a long game at all, there's a bit where she's going on a first date, and in order to like have a conversation, you put together these little speech bubbles that are made up of different puzzle pieces. So there's like 6 puzzle pieces and you snap them together, and then she says something on this date. But as the conversation goes on, there are fewer and fewer puzzle pieces, which represents like the idea of when you're going on a date and getting to know somebody, like it gets easier and easier to talk to them, like really clever. That's like all the game is just that, these very sort of clever ways of turning these relatable ideas into game mechanics. I found it very charming, if not the most like original story ever told.
Drop the hammer, Justin.
No, Griffin kind of touched on it. It is a very cool. It's like a very cool experiment in telling a story and hitting the emotional beats through, like in the same way that you would use music to pick up the pace if you were trying to elicit the sense of, joy slow the pace down, bring it into a minor key to make it like scary or sad. This really uses the mechanics of video games to communicate the undercurrent of the story. There's like, I'll give you a good example. There's a section, there's a little bit, it happens a couple times where you're like stuck on a train or a bus and you're flicking through Instagram or Twitter photos, you know, some sort of undisclosed social messaging service. And it's like, you don't even see most of the image, you just see like the retweets, the retweet button and the like button, and you flip through them that way, just like, retweet, like. And it's like you're not even registering what the image is because you can't see it. You're just sort of mechanically going through. And it's like that is also parallel to the sort of emotional experience that's being communicated by that portion. There's a ton of really smart stuff like that. I do wish the story was a little bit sort of less well trod, but I can see how if you're trying to do something really interesting with like storytelling, you maybe wouldn't want to reinvent the wheel vis-a-vis what the actual structure of the narrative is.
Yeah,
but it's like can't all be like, David Cage.
It's like Jesus Christ. it's like $3. It's a good pickup. I also on this last tour played a lot of Hearthstone new expansion. Mostly, it came out with a new single player mode called Monster Hunt, which is a lot like the I think it's called Dungeon Run mode, where you go up against different bosses and you like build a deck as you fight through different bosses and you find these permanent treasures that sort of change the rules of the game as you go. And this Monster Hunt mode is neat because instead of playing as the 9 established classes that have always been in Hearthstone, you play as these characters with like new powers and kind of hybrid decks. So there's like one that has rogue cards and hunter cards. And I found it really compelling. I played it a lot. I beat it a couple times with a couple of the different characters. Hearthstone continues to surprise me at how many fucking times it has pulled me back in. Like 15 times have I returned to Hearthstone after saying like, I think I'm done with Hearthstone.
I wanted to bring to honorable mentions a game that came out after April, sorry, but it's also a game that we probably wouldn't do ordinarily. It's Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, which came out on a platform known as the Wii U like 4 years ago or something like that. I don't know how you guys feel about Donkey Kong Country games, but I have very strong nostalgic memories and fondness for them. And I think both of these games, but Tropical Freeze in particular, because the original Donkey Kong Country Returns came out on Wii, and it was very good, but it, I don't know, felt a little unambitious in parts. Like, it just kind of felt like it was retreading, and Donkey Kong, geez, the names, I keep forgetting.
It's rough.
Tropical Freeze is the new one, which just came re-released on Switch.
I did
felt
not
like they were branching out a bit more, which
I did
really
not
liked.
I did not even know that this happened. I did not know this got re-released. I never played this on Wii U, so
it is so ridiculously good.
Is it? Okay.
It really is. It's like I think it's one of the better platformers made in forever.
I don't think it's on the level of like a Mario platformer. Like I don't it's
they're just
good,
totally different games. I think like that's the thing is for a Donkey Kong game, which is like a weird difficulty, really heavy weightiness. I mean, you have to completely abandon the feel of what a platformer is because it doesn't aspire to be like Mario, which is why I like it.
I would also add, like, I think what it doesn't do that Mario does very well is constantly remix the ways that you sort of experience the world. Whereas this, I think it's more about like, oh, there's a new enemy type, or oh, there's a new like platforming like mechanic, but by and large, like the core gameplay stays pretty consistent.
Sure.
I totally disagree. We should have brought this game.
Now? Fuck it.
Yeah, but what I think is really interesting about it is Mario does the, and I'm not the first person to point this out with this game, but Mario does the very slow, like, here's one thing, in the next level, here's another thing, in the next level is the combination of them, and it's very carefully paced. Well, I feel like Donkey Kong will do like three in one level, it'll drop three things and then it'll forget them for four stages, and then out of nowhere they'll all be back halfway through another level.
Yeah,
but 10 times harder.
Yeah, the other thing that I really 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 like about it that Mario straight up just doesn't do is Freeze has like a lot of interest in world building. And that's not to say, like, oh, full-on, you know, Half-Life style. But its environments are really rich and really interesting and playful. And not... Mario's fantastic, but sometimes I feel like it's so obligated to the imagery of the franchise that it gets really stuck in it.
And
that's why, what is it, The City was so fun in the most recent Mario, because it had some breathing room. Where Tropical Freeze, I mean, it goes nuts on which directions it wants to go with.
There should be a video on Polygon.com's YouTube page all about the small details that make this game so lively and interesting to look at by the time this episode goes up. So keep an eye out for that.
I remember Dan Reichert fighting very hard to get the music from this on the Giant Bomb Best Of list. Is it still hold up?
Yeah. It's excellent, I think.
Yeah, it's good. I don't know. I wasn't super plugged into the music, but it seemed pretty good. I do love Donkey Kong Country music in general, so I wouldn't be surprised.
I will say it's good enough that I was playing it on my flights to and from New York last week, and I usually just, you know, use that time to catch up on podcast and had my headphones in for the first however many minutes and then never ended up taking them out just because I was really, really enjoying it. Yeah, I mean, it's like so many of these other Wii U games. It makes me so happy that these games, like, you can tell when you play this game, the team, like, put their heart and soul in it, and I can only imagine how crappy that felt at the time, and now to, like, get a second shot and be portable and be all these other things, it's great. And I do think I loved those Donkey Kong games when I was a kid. But I think these are just so much more playable. I think it's really hard to go back to DKC's, where this is forgiving enough that it doesn't feel unfair.
Before we get into talking about our big games that we're bringing, talk about what we're doing with Besties now, or do we want to save that for the end?
I think we can do it now.
Yeah?
Yes.
Let's do it now.
Okay. Well, so what are we doing? I forget.
So, last I remember, we're going to be just doing an annual episode after this episode.
Great.
So,
now who should they tweet out if they don't like that? If they want to do something different?
At Justin McElroy.
At Russ Freshstick, if you don't enjoy that.
It was Justin's idea.
is this really our explanation, or are we going to edit this out and come at it a little better?
I mean, here's what I'm gonna say is like,
we
basically
can talk about why. I mean, there's very good reasons we don't like each other, like, as people. it's been so obvious.
That is not true.
No, we all love each other. It's just a matter of, you know, we like getting together and talking about games, but all of our schedules are very busy this time of year, really all year at this point, and we're all working on different things, and we thought, what better excuse to come back together at the end of the year and have a nice showdown as usual?
Those episodes are the most fun anyway, and we'll
listened to by an
enormous
margin.
And we'll do a good job with them. You know, we'll come out and we'll do like a full blown, what, like, you know, 8 hour long episode. Well, let's promise an 8 hour long episode
I'm
right now.
I'm gonna volunteer Justin McElroy's house. And we'll all go there.
Oh my god!
Did a video one time. We did
two
video ones.
Right?
That was fun. We should just we like recording the besties, but honestly, it's a lot to keep up with the latest game, the latest and greatest games. I mean, how many months have we had? Times where like, I don't know, I haven't. We're like rushing to play games at the end of the month because
we're like 2.5 weeks late on this and have had to reschedule it twice. Yeah. So I think that's evidence of,
So we like doing it very much, but it is hard to get all of us around a mic and then edit and play all the games and everything. So, but one
look, if you listen to the end of the year episode 10 minutes at a time, you could stretch it out all the way across the year. That's fine.
But I think the important thing is that we did tell you what was happening this time. Which is a step forward for the besties,
growing.
Tends to disappear like Brigadoon into the mist and reappear without explanation. So I'm happy that.
So I'm glad we did that, because now it's going to bring a sort of gravitas to all of our discussions of the many, many great games of April.
Can I talk about Labo?
I wish you'd talk about Labo.
Labo, Labo.
It's definitely Labo or Labo? Labo sounds.
Labo,
it's the Nintendo,
right?
Labio. I don't know what the problem is.
It's not that for sure. So I kind of dunked on this thing when it first got announced. Even though everybody was really excited about it, I was being really crotchety about this when it got announced, because it just seemed like a bunch of cardboard that Nintendo was charging you a lot of money for. And I'm here to announce I was wrong. It comes with a game cartridge as well. So it's not just the cardboard in the box. It is the game cartridge. And the other thing I was wrong about is that it's very fun and I like it very much. And in the very best sort of Nintendo way, it feels kind of magical when you're when it all is finished. So let me, I'm going to give you this at a microcosm, right? One of the things you put together is a radio controlled car. It's like, okay, that doesn't make any sense. It looks like a little robotic ant, I guess, is a way you could describe. There's like six little legs that come down, and then you attach your Joy-Cons to either side of the thing. And it took like 10 minutes to put together. There are step-by-step instructions in the game where you say, I'm putting together the RC car, and it gives you like, not just step-by-step instructions, fully 3D rendered. You can turn them around on the fly, see it from every angle. You cannot get confused doing this. It is like so blatantly obvious exactly what you should be doing.
I spent a lot of time building like IKEA furniture in the last 6 months. And there are definitely times in when you're building IKEA furniture when you're like, I have no idea what I'm even looking at.
That is not...
And being able to like rotate the 3D version of it would be a lifesaver, but you can't because it's just a stupid piece of paper.
Yeah. And so I finished putting the thing together. This one took all of 10 minutes. And when I got done, I put the little remotes in it and I started up the game that is connected to it. But it's really more like toy is more accurate. You're not like, there's no goals or anything. You're just kind of playing with your little toy. And it just kind of worked. The Joy-Cons rumbled in such a way that made the legs move, and it doesn't go in a straight line. It kind of roams around a little bit, but if you hold in the button on the screen, you know, you control which one is rumbling by holding the screen part and pressing blue or red, and then it just kind of rumbles. And if you hold both of them at the same time, it'll go forward. And there is a cardboard antenna that you punch out and slide into the tabs where the Joy-Cons were removed. That goes on the screen to make it look like there's a, like you're holding a sort of like.
That's not doing anything.
Remote control. No, it's doing nothing. How? That's the most Nintendo ass shit.
It really is.
It's like, and also, this is so cool. There's like a little monochromatic readout from the IR camera.
That's the craziest part.
It tripped me out. I was like, where is it pulling this from? I had no idea it was even capable of that. It is grainy as all hell. It looks like Sewer Shark on Game Boy. And but it's still like, well, it gives you a little readout.
It looks
of
like
what
the Game Boy camera. Did you ever use that?
Exactly. Yes.
That's the quality.
But it like worked. And my daughter and I have done that, and we've done the fishing rod, which is so cool. I mean, it even feels kind of good. Like once you've got it all put together, like it doesn't feel cheap. I mean, for something made out of cardboard, it feels pretty solid. Like it could handle some play, and the parts that are going to get a little wear and tear. There's a little cardboard tab that you put in to make a clicking noise when you use the rod and reel, and they have a replacement for those because that's going to get worn out. They have like replacement rubber bands for the rod and reel. But like once you're done with the rod and reel, there's a sort of stand that has a spool inside of it. And so you can pull on when you pull on the fishing rod, it pulls the line out of this little stand, and it's on a rubber band, so it pulls it back in as you let go of it. And then a string that is exactly the same color as the one on your toy is represented on the screen. So, like, it looks like you are pulling an actual fishing line that is underneath the water, and it bobs up and down when you move the stick up and down, and it, you know, reels in and out. And it just is so neat, it's really a delight. The one thing I will say is, my daughter is she is 3.5, and she is probably too young, to focus on it. She likes it when it's done, and what I will say is that like they break the construction on the ones that aren't the RC car. They break the construction into steps. So after like 10 minutes or so, it says like, hey, that's the end of this sort of round. You're safe to, you know, put stuff away and kind of come back to it later if you want. Because the rest of them that aren't the RC car, they can take like 45 minutes to an hour.
I think the piano takes an
hour and a half. And I haven't even messed around with the, I didn't even buy the robot thing. I hear that's like a multi-day sort of project. So If you have, I think, kids who are a little older, like up 6, 7, 8 in that neck of the woods and older, or, you know, you just want to do something that's fucking relaxing. I was bowled over by how just really neat it was. It's just a really cool sort of thing.
I am jealous that Henry is not of an age, because I don't know that I would get a lot out of this just doing it myself. It seems really cool, and it actually seems like the kind of thing that I could be into, but I know that it would be so much better if I was like sharing it with somebody. But Henry at this age, he would just destroy it in a way that would make the experience not pleasurable at all for me.
Yeah.
He would moisten it with his many fluids he produces.
It's a cool thing. And I think honestly, like, if you have the disposable income and you're an adult, it's not unenjoyable to put it together. I found very satisfying. Even when my daughter had sort of lost interest, I still very much enjoyed the folding, and even though I was having to kind of rush through it to try to keep her interest, and to make components of a fishing rod seem like a fun thing. Like, oh, yeah. Look, sweetie, it's a third of a fishing rod. Whee! Aren't we having a good time? But she does enjoy the finished product, and we've had a lot of fun with it. So
I think the part that makes me interested is not here yet, which is to say, and this probably still exists, I just haven't looked, the community creating things out of Amazon, like a standard Amazon
that
box.
Is absolutely already happening.
Yeah,
there's absolutely
really
people making
in.
Some buck wild shit with the, I forget what the like studio mode is called, where you can like make your program your own shit. But I have seen some wild stuff that people have started making with this. It's like full blown Lego Mindstorms already.
Yeah, that's cool stuff. I'm down with that. It'll be interesting to see how they support it, and whether, I don't know how well it sold. Like, I don't know if it's like stacking up in toy stores all over the country because no one bought it. But
it seems like kind of a sleepy launch, I will say. Like, they have not been hitting it really hard.
It'll be interesting. I also think in the holiday season, when people are like, well, I don't want to buy my kid just a video game, I want to get them something that's like quasi-educational.
Yeah,
so
right.
This would be the opportunity to do that.
You know what's weird, though? It seems like even from its announcement, Nintendo has been uncharacteristically pretty cash about it. Like, I remember even when they announced it, they were like, it's a new way to play with games if that's what you're into.
Well,
like,
I think it's because they were going for like a very, very, very broad, like casual audience. Like, for example, they didn't send early copies of it to any like gaming outlets. Very few outlets got it early. So, and they were mostly like, you know, the Time magazines of the world, like that equivalent. So I think that's why you haven't seen it, is because, you know, if they went for like, ooh, I hope we get like a big splash in the New York Times. Yeah.
I know the Switch has been selling well. I don't know that it necessarily has the penetration. Like, a lot of the people that I would have normally recommended this to were not people who are already Switch owners. And like I said, I know the Switch has been doing really well. I don't think it has like the, if this was something
well,
it has
for the, not hit Wii U numbers yet. As an interesting
right
point.
Like if this was for the Wii, where it's like everybody already has it, I think
it would blow up.
Yeah, I think it might be, but like the other cool thing about it is like it's not timely in any way, right? Like Nintendo didn't break the bank manufacturing this, so you know, maybe it's something, although the boxes are large, so that's gonna be like tough keeping that in retail, but as something to just like pick up in a little bit, like why not.
The really cool thing is that now it's done and it's out, they can make a game. You know what I mean? Like for the Switch, they can make a game for it to play. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like now
yes,
that it's out, they
can
do a game.
Right. That's kind of why I was so thrilled about Donkey Kong, because there had been so little coming out for
so long.
It's been a little bit. I still love it. It seems like even... You would think the first year would be the slowest, but this last like 4 months in Switch time seems like the slowest by far. And I think a lot of that is like, it's also not getting like as many, it's getting still a lot of like good indies, but not, it doesn't feel like it's as many, maybe, I don't know. It's just been a little slow.
Need that Stardew Valley multiplayer to come
right
out on Switch.
So
that'll
happen.
Dead Cells, I think, is still on its way.
still coming. Mario Tennis comes out in June, I think. Mm-hmm. So
Hyrule stuff's Warriors, coming. It's just, you know, for all those
Hyrule Warriors is in a week or so.
Please clap for Hyrule Warriors. Please love it. Enthusiasm. Russ, you want to do your game?
Yeah. It's been a while since I played it. Yeah. So my game is Minit. It is a game designed by the guy behind Super Crate Box and Loof Trousers and what's their big game that everyone loves?
Nuclear Throne.
Nuclear Throne, thank you, was like the big breakout one for them. And he is an awesome game designer, and he worked with a team of folks to make... picture Zelda, like original Zelda, OG Zelda. And unlike in Zelda where you have hearts and you die, here you only have 60 seconds. I was going to say 90 seconds, and that just goes against everything. You have 60 seconds, and after that 60 seconds...
That's the sequel. The sequel, minute and a half.
Minute and a half. After that 60 seconds, you die, and you start from scratch. Now, not fully from scratch, because you get basically any items you picked up or any information that you gleaned, obviously, you still have. So the idea is to sort of leapfrog in that 60 seconds to make as much progress as possible. So let's say you start out with nothing, and then in the first 60 seconds, you're running around and you find a sword on the beach. When you respawn, you've still got that sword, and now you can run directly to the wall of trees that you can now cut down because you have that sword, so you then progress further. Where the game gets neat, where I really like it, is when they play with you and time in interesting ways. So very early on, there's a turtle at a lighthouse that you start talking to, and the turtle predictably talks very, very slowly. So you basically spend your entire life talking to this turtle to learn
very good.
A secret, which is very funny. Like it's and they play with a lot of that stuff. And you know, by and large, it's not a very long game at all. I think it took me probably an hour, maybe an hour and a half to finish. But there's like a bunch of secrets to uncover. There's like a lot. The map has like a lot of like nooks and crannies to find, and there's like a lot of charm to it. They all the characters like have like a lot of like personality and are like goofy and funny and memorable. And it, you know what it reminds me of is Link's Awakening. Yeah. I feel like Link's Awakening had like a lot of like goofy cast of characters, and the art style definitely kind of follows that as well. So yeah, I really liked it. I put it on Steam. I don't remember what other platforms it is on. I know it's not on Switch, even though it would be a nice fit on Switch.
It's on PS4 and Xbox. Also.
It's on PS4 and probably Xbox, maybe?
It is. I was really looking forward to this game and played it. And the concept I adore.
Yeah.
I was really disappointed in the length of it because it is such a cool concept. And they do, I guess to its credit, it does each of these like clever ideas and how it... like handles the minute long limitation. It does have like a decent amount of those ideas represented, and it does each one once. So you're not, it feels respectful of your time in that way.
Sure.
But I was so in love with the idea of the game and the execution of the game. And I was really having a really good time with it. And then it was just over, and the ending is very abrupt, I think, like super, super abrupt. And I didn't find
it that abrupt.
I guess taster's choice. But it for me, it just kind of like ended, and I thought that there was going to be a lot more to it, and I was pretty bummed out about that. But I think that, I mean, I guess silver lining way of looking at that is that it's because the game was very good and I was having a very good time with it, and very disappointed that it just kind of ended. But
sure.
Yeah, that was kind of my takeaway. There is like a new game plus mode where you have, I think like 40 seconds. Am I making that up?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't played the new game plus.
You have, you have fewer hearts that you start out the game with, and it is just generally much harder. I will say I enjoy watching speed runs of this game too, because they've got it down to like under 7 minutes. Is wow. The current record.
Yeah, that's cool.
And it's really neat to watch all the little optimizations, but I just wish it was a little beefier.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
The new game plus mode's pretty different. If you're looking for more, I would poke at it. I don't know. I thought it was right length, but I'm also at that point where I like things that are really short. But overall, I just like how I think this is kind of what you're poking at too, Griffin. How well thought out every detail is. It feels like a very edited game, and I don't feel like we get a lot of those very often. I feel like usually all the fat is left on the bone, and I appreciate how, I don't know, it just feels really clean and crisp in a way that not many games do.
There's a way of looking at it through my criticism of maybe it is the right length, and I just, it's that longing that makes me think it's not the right length, but that if it was longer, the shtick would instantly overstay its welcome.
Yeah, for sure.
And it doesn't, it definitely doesn't do that. So that's a good thing. I just, man, I really liked it. I guess I liked it then. Huh.
You've convinced what me. Happened.
Wow. This is why it's good that we talk about these games on the besties.
I liked Minute. I thought it was neat. I didn't finish it. Maybe I should go back and finish it. I just wasn't.
See, to me, that's not a big endorsement of its quality, because yeah, it's not a hard game to finish.
No, I got a little. I like games that look a little bit nicer than this, like Dream Quest. And
oh my gosh,
I found myself not knowing what to do next a lot of the time. And like I think I just was kind of, that wasn't a joke.
It's an adventure game, and that's the whole point.
Yeah, I know. But like,
actually, that's a good point. Cause it's funny. Cause you do love that genre, but it really, parts of it do feel like, why is that? Like, this weird rabbit is talking to me and he's asking me for something. Like, I don't know where to go.
I do. Yeah,
that was kind of like that. I'll give you an example. Stuff. There's like a, there was a bit, I know the bit I stopped at. Somebody was like, I need this plant that grows near snakes. And I was like, well, I guess I'm going to wander around and look for it. That sounds boring because I only get 60 seconds to do it, but I guess. But I don't know. That's not being fair. I
disagree with that, because I think that it actually makes this idea of fetch quests more exciting, because then it feels like, I got to find these fucking snakes. Where are the fucking snakes? Oh, my God. I think I hear snakes. I'll come back in my next life.
I'll get you next time, snakes.
I did hit one point where there was like a character I had to like rescue or something that... it's funny, I tried to do a video of the game. It was me and Simone, and that was the exact point I was at, and I probably went through 30 cycles just unable to find this fucking character, and that was a big bummer, but that was the only, I guess it padded the length of the game for me by nearly a half hour, so that's good, but it was kind of frustrating, but I really enjoyed like being lost, because unlike a lot of games that try to do this thing, like, I think the pressure of the time limit, it kind of makes everything more fun. So should we talk about the game,
the biggin?
Chris and I are gonna do it together, because I hated it and that's not true.
Can you guys do like role play where one of you is Atreus and one of you is Kratos?
Yeah, I'll be the boy.
I don't like it. Good, but I want to love you.
I love you. I love you, Daddy, but I'm a big piece of shit. Just kidding. I love you and I want to do a good job, but fuck you, Dad.
What's God of War?
That is my favorite. If I had to choose one thing that I loved about God of War, and there are many things, Atreus turning into a little... shithead,
the scamp. Yeah,
oh man, that I loved that part.
Has anybody has there been a hot take article where David Jaffe takes a dump on this new God of War yet? I kept expecting it to make the rounds, and I kind of thought that it would just happen, like I would will it into existence because I wanted it so bad, and then I don't think it came together.
Yeah, he said, I definitely read a tweet of his where he said it didn't have enough good South Park humor in it, and we're talking about God of War, and Chris, you want to, it's like one of the best games ever made. Chris, you want to talk about it?
Oh, sure. I'll give the brass tacks. Remember old God of War? Well, what if they took that and they removed the orgy bathtub scenes? Is it a bathtub? Is it a hot tub? That's probably closer to it.
I did find the secret orgy scene.
Oh, you found it.
You did?
Yeah, it's,
just he, please tell me he gets rid of Atreus before that scene happens.
Yeah, he says, "Boy, wait outside. I have dad stuff to do."
Yeah, it plays. It's God of War, with very, very, very light, Dark Souls inspired melee combat, but not even close to as difficult. And I don't know. I would say it's more Tomb Raider than Uncharted in that. It's not as obsessed with environmental storytelling or stopping the game for like 15 minutes to have flashy cutscenes.
For me, it was more if we're just talking about like mechanically and feel, like it was way more like Batman, the Arkham Arkham games more than anything. Yeah, that's kind of how it hit for me. Yeah,
I sort of see that.
Yeah,
Isn't it interesting in the sense of like. Yeah,
Corey Bar. I was about to say Balrog, but that's the other one. I'm sure he gets that a lot. Corey Barlog was most recently the cinematic director on the Tomb Raider series, and this has no cinematics or cutscenes whatsoever. So like, that's what he learned about the cinematic process. Is like, actually, fuck these.
But you realize like the whole game is a cinematic. Like,
yeah, I guess
you understand 100%. There's like, obviously an implication in that it is not interactive.
This is fascinating. No, us talking about me and Chris having sort of disparate ways of comparing it. Two games and none of them really fitting very well, I think is actually, I don't think I appreciated this while I was playing the game. While I was playing it, I was just like, this is a fucking great game with like cool combat and shit. But I didn't really appreciate that, like, it does feel, it may not look super original in terms of like combat and mechanics, but in thinking back on it, like, yeah, I actually think it is. I don't know that we've necessarily seen anything quite like it before.
I think it's one of those weird things where it's that, and also everything is like it, because they went. It feels like they went buffet style across all the games, and we're like, hey, what feels good, and how can we mash it into one thing? Like the axe throwing mechanic is like very clearly built around headshots in a action, mostly melee combat game. The boomerang effect is, I don't know, it kind of has a. Something about it that reminds me of old grappling hook mechanics for some weird reason. There's this like trade-off of, you know, whether or not you use your fist for building up the stun damage to do hardcore hits, which reminds me a lot of the most recent Doom that gets you like in there, or staying away, but, you know, slowly picking at things. It feels like there's just so many influences in that, rather than doing what I suspect a lot of developers do when they set out to make a genre game and look at their peers, it feels like this game looked at everything and just wanted to like incorporate as many things that they know feel good no matter what the genre was and stuff it into a single game
without adhering to the baggage associated with those things. And like, there's a lot to talk about here, and that's why I think we're going to be dedicating most of this episode to it. But like, the idea of combos, right? Past God of War games had like a combo meter, and then you see that in like the Ninja Gaiden games and Devil May Cry and all the Platinum games, is definitely present here, because you have to do them to live. You have to do them to like succeed in a fight, but there's not like a number on the screen like going upwards. But even without that feedback, I was pulling off some of the most, like, definitely the most satisfying combos I've ever had in like a God of War game before, and also like maybe in any action game ever. Like being able to hack at a couple folks with my axe and then use my runic power and then toss my axe into a guy to freeze him and then just start punching the shit out of another guy. Like, all of that stuff was so fluid and so cool without necessarily having a numerical or mechanical like reason behind it.
Yeah, I think part of the reason that feels so good is because just like the mechanics themselves, like hitting things feels really good because of a number of reasons, so sound effects, visual effects, etc. But also they designed it in such a way that like you do not need to remember XXY combo to accomplish something cool and make yourself feel good. So like the fact that you can, like, one of the most devastating combos in the game is just hold R1 like for a second and it like unleashes this like helicopter attack. Another is just like wait a second and then hit R1 Like, they're all really, really simple in it. And the end result is that it feels great, but doesn't require you to memorize all
the idea
stuff.
Of, yeah, the mapping the combos and only letting you have two powerful combos at any time is a relief. I agree. Most people end up just spamming the two combos they can learn anyway. So recognizing that, I think, is smart. Sorry,
and
Justin,
it's also, it's custom. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Juice.
No, I don't know if it's useful to differentiate the sort of powers from combos, but I think thinking of them as combos is interesting. I didn't think of them that way. I thought of them just as like powers, but it's there's something about the way you're talking about, like, doing the idea of combos without like throwing a multiplier up on the screen. And it is really cool how well the pieces of the combat in this game fit together in a way that makes you want to tie them into a fluid thing. Like, throw your axe, now you've got your bare fists, you pummel a guy, and then you have your son, you know, just pound him with arrows, and then his stun meter's up, and then, oh, if you grab your axe back, you know, during the combo, then you'll have that and ready to start again on the next cat. Like, it is one of the very few. Normally I am notorious for, in an action game, like character action game, finding a series of moves that works well and then just like leaning on it. But God of War both demands that you branch out, but also like rewards that with just being fun. Like, it just
it's fun.
Feels good.
I was
to use different abilities.
I was doing shit not because it was like the tried and true best thing to do. It's because everything you can do looks and feels fucking fantastic. And so I was doing stuff and found myself doing stuff not because I had formulated like a best strategy around my combat, but just because like I've felt like the God of War and had all these cool things I could do, and so I wanted to try and do them in the coolest way possible. And we've talked a lot about
Have you seen that? Well, of course you've seen this. That scene in Captain America Civil War where it's Bucky and Captain America like beating the snot out of Iron Man and the shield is bouncing around. That's what it feels like. Like that is like the closest like thing I could think of. It's like not a video game, but that like everything just hitting so hard and rotating and switching up styles in a matter of like seconds. It's very strange.
Yeah. There's on top of that, like a customization layer that I kind of bristled at for the first couple hours that I played the game, because it is dense. There is a lot of stuff you can do. And I do think it is a genuine modern masterpiece. I think there was like one too many customization layers for my taste, because you have these runic powers that you can weave into your combos that have a like a cooldown associated with them, and you can find new ones and you can upgrade those. You have skills that you can unlock as you sort of level up your weapons that you can upgrade and customize, and then you choose what you want to spend your experience points on to unlock. And that's true for Atreus, your son, as well. You unlock his powers also and can buy him new gear. You can buy yourself different armor pieces or find different armor pieces or craft different armor pieces and upgrade them individually, and you can slot gems into each of them. It was a little bit too much management for me. Like, if you could have cut out like the gym enhancements, maybe just like cut that out, I feel like maybe it would have been...
I think what would have been smarter if they had like locked all that stuff, like they were smarter about like easing you into that stuff, where it was like, okay, for the first 10 hours of the game you're only gonna get armor, that's it, and then slowly but surely maybe you get a gem here or a gem there, and then hour 20 you've got like a few gems to pick from. But like, they really do give you a ton of options very early,
and the gems are also kind of a pain in the ass too. It makes it hard to compare gear. Like, if you're trying to buy a new piece, the stats of your currently equipped gear incorporate the gems that are slotted into it, so it's like, okay, well, if I really need to know what's best, I need to go in and take all those gems out. And also, like, you have to if you want to change your gear, you have to manually pull each of those gems out. And I don't know if you sell gear, if those get automatically pulled out or if they're automatically sold. I don't know. I didn't end up having to sell much of anything because I always had plenty of money. There's also some weird like balance issues. You gain experience that lets you unlock new moves. That's also a resource that's being put into the different powers, like the abilities, or we were talking about them as combos that you get. That is hard because you're using the experience that you spend on like buying new abilities to level up those powers. So it really can discourage you experimenting with new things because you got to spend a bunch of points to get them up to snuff, to get them to a point that the ones you're already comfortable with are at. But then I hit a point like 2/3 of the way through where I just had more points than I knew what to do with. Like I had bought everything that I could have. So like definitely felt like there's some sort of, I was like really struggling with them at first. And that made me not experiment with new abilities because I didn't want to spend the points on them. I just wanted to beef up my core stuff.
The result of that is I hit a point where I felt like I was getting kind of weak. I was like falling behind the power curve a little bit. And so I just invested everything I had into a new loadout. And then that's all I used for the rest of the game. Yeah. Everything I found from that point on, I was just like, oh, okay, that's going in the old God bank. So I had a few issues there, but I still, it does do a lot. I made this complaint about Horizon Zero Dawn, right? Where you had like a bunch of different upgrade and customization options. And I didn't think that any of them felt especially meaningful. And so if that was the case, I was like holding on to everything and waiting for something that seemed like it would be meaningful. And the result is just that I wasn't getting powerful and it was weird and I didn't love it. At least in God of War, like when you do invest your points or resources into like a new loadout or a new power that you've upgraded or whatever, you do fucking feel it because there are pretty big sort of tangible differences as you upgrade them. So it had that going for it.
So there are things about this, and I do want to talk about like the story and the writing and everything. I don't want to get into spoilers, but like it's extremely good. But I did, while we're sort of talking about a little niggling things that like kind of bother us, I think the combat is extremely, extremely good unless you're fighting one large single target, which happens a fair number of times in the game.
What's your problem with that?
It felt, so you fight like the same ogre about 12 times.
Right.
It's the same dude with the same like large stone pillar, and he has basically the same moves. Sometimes he's fire, sometimes he's ice, but by and large, he's the same ogre. And whenever I would do those fights, they just felt kind of damage sinky to the point where like I didn't have a lot of opportunities to parry attacks. He was just like this giant like damage soak, and I'd hurl my axe at him a bunch of times and I'd like whack him in the knees a few times. It just didn't feel great. There's actually a couple like true boss fights in the game that I feel the same way. I don't want to spoil things, but like when you're fighting very powerful guys.
You're not talking about the first boss fight, which is one of the greatest boss fights in video game history, right?
Okay, which cool. I don't really consider that like mechanically a boss fight. Like that, it happens in the first 10 minutes and it's more of a cutscene than anything.
You're out of your fucking mind.
A whack job, and I'm glad the show's over. You're in such a nutcase.
It's a boss fight, it's one of the best boss fights ever.
I didn't find it like necessary to use mechanics.
I know what Fresh means. I mean, it's not even whether or not it's necessary. You actually don't have many of the mechanics.
Yeah, no,
so it's
yeah,
like
totally.
You're kind of
like,
just learning how to. It's a very good boss fight. It's also a tutorial.
Hey, yes. Fresh Stick, did you like the fighting the ogres? Did you like that any better when? See, I really dug that when it was part of a larger encounter where, like, yes. Managing that was, like, part of the
I
fun. Especially ogres specifically, because if you pile damage onto them, you can stun them and climb on top and weaponize them.
Those are two different guys. There's, like, the trolls with the giant, like, stone pillars, and then there's the guys you can climb on, so those are two different enemies. I did find the guys you can climb on a little better. There is one instance for the most part of like a recurring single target fight that is, if you've played the game and you've played the post game, you know what I'm talking about. There's like a post game series of fights,
yes,
involving a single target, and those in my opinion are excellent.
Yeah,
but through the campaign, whenever it was like a single target fight, I felt myself kind of bouncing off of it, mostly because like whenever I would do the group fights against like a batch of six or eight enemies, however many, it would feel so good.
Yeah.
So the fact that like those other fights felt like kind of a drag to me was a bummer. But I think that's just like them figuring out ways to make the combat more unique. Batman, for what it's worth, another game that I absolutely love, those Arkham games, had the same issue, which is like, well, it's, you know, once you were fighting like a character like Bane,
you're just gonna punch him a thousand times.
Yeah,
you just lose some of the finesse of it.
Did you get to the end game fights?
Yeah, that's sort of what I was referring.
You thought that's surprising. I mean, I felt
no, those are excellent.
He likes those a lot.
Okay,
those are excellent. I think those are really well designed and like feel like the best possible Dark Souls boss fights imaginable. Like, I always love those Dark Souls boss fights that are like human v human, but like it's like a total like battle of wills.
The Father Gascons of the world.
Yeah, exactly. So
we've only talked about the mechanics, and the mechanics are very good.
Okay, we should talk about
the story.
The story
is like why I think I'm going to remember this game. Like, I think it's why it's going to like stand out, and maybe it is like perfectly executed. It's also just like I could not shake the feeling the whole time I was playing it that it's God of War. And if there was one franchise that I thought would tell a compelling story about being a parent, it was going to be fucking God of War. Like, I could not shake how wild that is the whole time I was playing it. Because, man, it does a very good, and surprisingly, and this is not an adjective I ever thought I would ever, ever, ever apply to this series, a very reserved job of telling this like nuanced story about a relationship.
Can you guys think of another sequel and sequels like a stretch, but a relaunch, a revamp that was so much about subverting the games that came before it? Because like
I think Breath of the Wild.
Breath of the Wild was a return to like the aesthetic
original
of the first, the
but it
very
was reverting.
Game.
It was going against like Skyward Sword, and that.
Well,
era.
I'm even more thinking from a narrative perspective because, like, for me, God of War is interesting because a lot of games take the mechanics and like we're gonna make this feel like it used to feel. God of War is very unique, I think, unless I'm forgetting some games, but like unique in that it is a game that is sort of obsessed with regret for the actions of its main character in the other games that like lauded his sort of brutality and his single-mindedness. This character is a character that, and this story is one that is undercutting what the entire rest of the franchise is about. It's fascinating.
So I think it exists elsewhere in two spots that go to what I thought this game was vibing like from the beginning. Uncharted 4 is that story-wise. It's supposed to be, maybe I shouldn't have done any of these adventures. And the new Tomb Raider.
That was the only one I could think of.
Yeah, the promise of the new Tomb Raider. And they've kind of done it in previous ones, but it seems like they're going hard on the upcoming one.
I think even the first tomb of the new Tomb Raider games, it really doesn't feel like a sequel as much as it feels like a complete relaunch of the series, but it feels much more it has a completely different vibe from the old Tomb Raider games.
But I mean, specifically the plot of the new one is, actually robbing tombs is despicable.
Bad. Yeah.
Which is like, oh, okay, that's the name of the game. And I think God of War is the exact same thing. But yeah, I other than those, yeah, I mean, the only thing that I can kind of think of, and this isn't quite that, but the shift from Grand Theft Auto 2 to Grand Theft Auto 3.
I don't necessarily know that was the best direction.
No, well, I know, but I'm not saying it was the right direction, but I think it makes a pretty significant shift in terms of like the tone and critiquing the tone.
Yeah, it's wild in that it manages to reinvent God of War, but in a way that makes this feel very much like the second half of a great novel. You know, almost like the first half was very much about a character seeking revenge, and the second half is about the costs of that and like the hidden price of that. And like that's something like film and books have done, but like I don't know that you've ever seen video games, which are so much about the power fantasy, subvert that power fantasy in this, and certainly not within the bounds of the same, ostensibly same series.
The thing that you have to keep in mind is, and people I think sort of forget that, like they associate Dave Jaffe with like all of the original God of War games, but Barlog was worked, like he was, correct me if I'm wrong, the lead director on two?
That is correct.
Which was the best of them before
which was
this
excellent,
one.
Like fantastic. So like it's what's really interesting is like he has been with this game the whole way, pretty much. I'm pretty sure he worked on the first game as well.
He did, yeah.
And
lead animator on the first one.
Lead animator. So like he's been with it the whole way, and so like who better to sort of appreciate these like twists and turns and potentially missteps tonally, and then like do something completely different, like turn that on its ear. Like how else could you be working on the same thing for 20 years or however long it's been and still keep it fresh in your mind and not have it be like a slog?
Yeah.
You don't
a Corey Barr slog.
You don't even have to go that far to see the parallel of like, and I don't mean to read into the contents of Mr. Barlog's heart, but the idea that he might, like, he has become a father since this, like in the middle of this franchise, and like I wonder if there's some part of him that felt a need to atone for the game, like the tenor of
the
those existing God of War games. Like, okay, if I'm going to show my son or my daughter, I don't actually know, I'm going to show my child, like, this is how a person acts. This is an acceptable way. Do I need to now undercut that to like show them that there is a price to that and that people can grow and change? Like it's really interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. My read on it, and again, I don't know. I think Plant has spoken, but I don't know specifically, is that, again, if you're going to be working with the same character for that long, having them be a one note angry guy for that long is just a bad character. Like it's just bad.
If they had just made God of War 4, I was kind of, I felt the same way about Uncharted 4, where when Uncharted 4 ended, I was like, okay, that's it. No more Uncharted games. We can't do this again, especially not with the sort of introspective tone that this game had. And I felt the same way after God of War 3, where I enjoyed it, but by the time I reached the end, I was like, okay, that's it, right? Like, we can't, no more PSP games. Ready at Dawn, y'all are doing the Lord's work over there. The only people making PSP games, but we gotta stop, right? If this was just God of War 4, it would have been, even if it had been great, it still would have just been okay, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
And what it is, I don't know. I feel like we haven't actually like talked about what makes the story great, and I think it may be difficult to do so without spoiling it.
Right.
I do want to mention one thing about the story that it won't be a spoiler, but I think is probably the hardest thing that they do that no other, I really can't remember another game that did it. There is a ton of prattle in this game. And by prattle, I mean like back and forth, like conversations between two or more characters. And it's done not as like core storytelling mechanics. It's all like ancillary, like side story stuff, world building, learning like cute little cute little like stories or myths or whatever that they're talking to each other about. And invariably, whenever games try to do this, I check out 100%.
Yeah.
I usually don't read flavor text in games. I know how much time is spent writing that stuff. I really have a respect for the people that do it. I just don't read it. And here, I was so engaged that, like, whenever a story was being told and I was in the canoe and I was rowing, I would sit and wait at the beach until the story was finished because I really honestly cared. It's amazing. That's an amazing accomplishment.
It not only does it do that, it made me care about, like, Norse mythology, which I had no fascination with before going into this game, for like the first time ever. Like, it does a good amount of not just character building but world building as well, in a way that I really sank my teeth into. But to like go back to what I said about it being like reserved, that to me is like what made it so special, and it's what made it so successful as a story about a father and son, because it has these moments, these like emotional spikes, but you have to work for them, and they come at points in the story where they feel very realistic. Like that that development of that relationship is very well paced and very even though it's taking place in this like fantastical world, it feels very realistic, because it would be way too obvious if it's just like in chapter two, you know, the boy saves Kratos's life or something, and he's like, boy, I'd love you. Like, that would have been kind of busted. And it nothing is obvious like that in the game. And it's what makes the moments that they do have. And there's not like, it's not a tearjerker, right? It's not constantly trying to deliver these emotional payloads. And that's why whenever they do it, even if it's in like a very, very, very subtle, very quiet moment, it hits with like tectonic force. I don't want to mention any of them here, because they are very, very special moments that are like the reason why I loved the game so much. So I don't want to spoil them, but it is the scarcity and realism with which those moments are delivered that really just blew my fucking brain. It really, really blew me away.
Yeah, it's also a great game. Sorry.
It also does open world stuff, I think, in a equally sort of reserved. I don't like character action games or open world games basically at all anymore. Like, a new open world game will come out, like a Far Cry or a Just Cause 3, and I'll play it for like a couple hours, and I'll be like, I don't want to invest all the time to run around this whole place. And the same thing for like character action games, like Bayonetta 2. I picked that up and I was like, hey, I bounced off this before, maybe I'll get into it now. And I bounced off it just right again. But I'll be damned if like this game didn't make me care about both of the things, both the character action elements and the open world elements. It's fucking good. 10 out of 10.
Well, I think why it works as an open world game is similar to why like the Tomb Raider reboot did, which is to say, it doesn't feel like an open world game unless you want it to. So you can like play it as like a linear story game, and then, but you can also do side stuff, and like there's reasons to do the side stuff, but like it still stands on its own feet as like a linear story game, which is cool.
It also does a great job of capturing the feel of a parental funeral. And this is the opening of the game, so I don't think I'm spoiling anything, but it opens up with a parental funeral, and there's so much relatable stuff there, like how 90 seconds after walking away from the funeral, your dad punches a treasure chest so hard that the lid explodes. It's just really like stuff that really resonated with me.
And everyone gets knives at the end.
Yeah. The dad gives the son a knife and then yells at him a lot for not stabbing the animal right. And then he punches another treasure chest so hard that the lid explodes. It's like, yeah, that's me.
Did we talk about the interrupting dialogue thing? It's got a really cool and talk about like small things that I don't think I have seen anywhere else. You are often like, sometimes Kratos will be telling a story. So the open world is connected by this big lake, and a lot of times you'll be, kind of rowing to your next objective, or it sometimes even happens like while you're climbing on something. If you're in the middle of a long climb, Kratos, or another character will start to tell an anecdote. And if you arrive at where you're going, pretty much every game you like lose that. It's just gone. You never hear the rest of that dialogue or whatever. But this game will actually provide another character to give a contextual prompt for what, like, hey, you were telling us about some giants. Can you finish that story? And sometimes like you're in the middle of a story, or you're almost done with that story, or you had just started a story about giants. Can you pick up where you left off? And they'll start telling the story like from the point they were at. It's amazing. Like, it's
yeah, so
such a smart idea.
Yeah.
A lot of this stuff that, and it's astonishing we haven't talked about this yet, is in service of the fact that it is one long camera shot. Camera never cuts away the whole time unless you, I guess, go to the pause menu or die. And when you die, God, the game reloads so fucking fast. It is a miracle from Christ on high. When you die, it's like, oh no, I died. Press X to restart. Oh, I'm back in it again. It is so fucking good. But when you don't die, it's the game's just one long camera shot, which I remember reading about in like a review before I started playing. And I was like, wow, that sounds like the coolest shit ever. And then I started playing and I instantly forgot about it, which I think is the best, which is the optimal way to sort of appreciate this feature of the game. But then, like, looking back at it and realizing what they did, it is a game design feat that is almost beyond comprehension.
Yeah, they do they generally like are very smart about hiding loads in interesting ways. So like when you go into the whatever central area to like port to another realm, there's like a very drawn out animation that you're sort of waiting to complete before you can move on, which, like, again, hiding a load screen. The interesting one for me is there's a fast travel mechanic where you go through the world tree. It's like a creepy ghost tree. And effectively, it's like a long looping path that never ends. Truth be told, like, if you could run forever, you'd be able to run forever, essentially. But the idea is, after a certain amount of time, after the game is actually loaded to where whatever area you're going next, a door appears. And even though I knew that the game was just hiding that load screen, I would always, always, always sprint through that stupid tree, thinking that I would get to that stupid door sooner, even though I knew I would not. And that is a testament to like how good the magic trick is, that you really think, oh, I need to actually travel around this tree to like get to the spot that I need to go to. Nope, you don't.
You know,
but
it's a very good video game.
Nintendo Labo for
Labo game of the year,
game of the month,
year.
Oh wow, shit. Are we? So
yeah,
I guess we're
gonna jump.
All right,
into
then
it.
We'll do our first annual episode 2019. I guess.
Okay, sounds good.
Because we already decided on Labo.
How's May looking for the May episode? let me just see here. We got I'm looking forward to checking out Sly Spy on Switch. Johnny Turbo's Arcade Sly Spy Secret Agent.
It's a hell of a
what
title.
What better time to switch to annual, because it is unquestionably the slowest May I could ever remember in the video game history. Like,
Star
it is
Trek
outrageous how little is coming out in May.
A CCG is in early access in May. Woof's a daisy, y'all.
This is what happens. You have bangers in 2017, and then it's Sleepy Time Junction.
Well, we had bangers in the first quarter of 2018.
Sure, but not in the quotient.
Yeah, I guess not.
Last year.
State of Decay is like the only thing.
Ooh.
I should maybe like stretch out God of War. You know, I'm hurtling towards the finish. I think I might just like try to stretch that out a little bit. Flashbacks June 7th.
Teach your son how to shave.
Right. Well, folks, that's going to do it for us forever. Thanks so much for listening to the besties. I will say this. I don't know if we're going to continue to do annual episodes. I don't know if the podcast feed will necessarily be the best method of doing that. I will try if it is possible. But I don't know if I'm going to still have if these accounts will stay active or whatever.
You could just, we could get it up on Art19. That's not a problem.
Well, I mean, it's assuming a lot.
Should
like,
we be doing this on
time.
The podcast? Are we
no,
doing
I'm just
this
telling
in
people
the
if they want to find us again, like where we'll be at. Like, it'll probably be on YouTube too. If you want to subscribe to Polygon,
yeah, it'll be on YouTube. I think I will strive and ensure that it gets up on the right feed. Don't worry about
somebody will make sure it happens.
Somebody will.
We'll
maybe
keep a light on.
I have abandoned enough podcasts and tried to return to them to say that sometimes people go out of business. Providers shut down, things happen. So I'm just saying.
That's true.
All things change, just like the besties change. But I will say we've had a lot of fun here today. Well, about the regular amount of fun for besties episode and
medium
amount of fun. But
this could be fun. This is because I want there to be some.
I have deeply enjoyed all the times that we have done the besties, both in sickness and in health. And I really appreciate people who've, against all odds and reason, stuck with this goofy podcast this whole way. So thank you to you sincerely. We very much appreciate it.
Want to say something to those people. Like, the bummer is, like, you guys, the fans, will not have any opportunity to listen to any of us in any other venues.
That's true. We're going dark.
It's like all four of us just will not have any other outlets for
I'll tell you, if
podcasting.
You're not listening to History of Fun, you should. It's a very good podcast about the histories, the secret histories behind fun things. And you would very much, it is Chris, and it is Fresh, and it is Allegra, and it's a very good show.
Thank you, Justin.
I'm just saying, it's a good program.
Also very successful and good is Sawbones, a great podcast that Justin does with his lovely wife.
Hey, got a book coming out this October, bit.ly/Sawbones book. Buy my book. Buy my book.
And The Adventure Zone is also very good.
Hey, thanks, man.
Wonderful. Let's name them all. Let's go down the list.
Let's go to the whole family. I want to, before we wrap up, I want to know predictions for the next episode that we do this December.
Oh,
what's going to be the hot shit? I think God of War is going to merit a big discussion, I think, for GOTY.
There's going to be a few of them. I think God of War certainly has a very good chance. Red Dead, very, very good chance.
Yeah, Red Dead 2.
Comes out in October.
Oh, yeah. You said Red Dead.
I stuttered.
Let me hit you with this. Let me scoop you up a big doll of Spider-Man. The coming this September.
Oh, yeah, Spider-Man, sure.
Do you know what's going to win? And it's going to be very appropriate because I think it won, or it almost won, the very first annual Besties Award.
What?
Kentucky Route Zero.
Oh, wow.
It ends this year. The full game comes out this year.
I'm going to play it from
the beginning. Do you remember there was a time when we were like, hey, maybe we can't give it best game of the year this year because surely it will be finished next year,
and that was like 2013 or whatever the hell.
Yeah,
that does sound familiar.
The Crew 2,
come on, now you're just having some fun.
It's gonna be a Call of Duty, it's gonna be a Battlefield. I don't know, there's a lot of X factors, honestly. Like, until
Battlefield is really good,
July and August look fucking rough. Things pick back up around Spider-Man Shadow of the Tomb Raider September. But yeah.
Shenmue 3. How about a game of lucky hit again with me, your old pal Shenmue?
Is that the guy's name?
Yeah, his name is Lucky Hit Shenmue.
Knew it.
All right.
Shenmue, the forklift man.
Let's wrap up on a great note. Thanks so much for listening to the Besties. Be sure to join us again next end of calendar year for the Besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
Besties!